So we discussed last time when should a person start dating, and that a person should define themselves and attain a balanced state and be consistent. And assuming a person has passed those hurdles and he's holding by the stage where he should start dating, so then you go on to step two. How do you start? So we're going to touch on the subject from a few different angles. Do's and don'ts. And you shouldn't, but you could. So what are the do's? Do tell people you're interested in dating. So our title for tonight for this part is going to be how to start. And number one is going to be tell. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Tell your rabbis. Tell people you're interested in dating. Once we've touched on that, we will say tell and don't trust. Meaning, you are easy pickings for all those well-meaning people who have a neighbor who has a genetic disease, have a neighbor who spent every other week in Kfar Shaul, that's the mental institution up the block. You are easy pickings for all those people who have a friend who they should tell you what that friend's issue is, but they mean well. We will be done them the kavs chus. We'll assume they mean well, and they try to set you up. Now, why are you easy pickings? You should always know your weaknesses. So before you're desperate, we're assuming you're just starting, so you're not yet desperate. You are a ger, as in a sojourner. You're a foreigner. This isn't your hometown. I don't care if you were born from. You're still a ger. Ger as in a foreigner. And so you don't know the land. You don't know that this girl is well known around the neighborhood for her history with drugs and who knows what else. You're new here. So to you, she's a beautiful, quiet girl. So that's weakness number one. Weakness number two is you don't have family here to look after you. Very often a person that's an Israeli, well, his family could find out about the girl. You don't know where to begin. Weakness number three is that you're new to the scene. You're a chozer b'tshuva or a ger, so you don't really know what the norms are. Short of, you're not picking her up at the bar. So then if they tell you she's a nice girl and everything, okay, so then what could be wrong with that? You'll find out. I hope you won't find out, but guys usually do find out. And weakness number four is what Baruch so aptly said, you're desperate. Now, why are you desperate? You're desperate because you're not getting set up often enough. You're desperate because you come from a world where you were talking to girls every day, and now you've spent 6 months, 12 months, 2 years, 5 years, whatever it is, in an unnatural environment. It's not natural for a guy beyond a certain age to be without someone of the opposite gender, meaning Hashem created it. That once a guy hits the age of 12, 13, 14, what normally happens is he's interested in having a partner of the opposite gender. So at that stage, what's normal is that, say 16 or 18, but the truth is that the desire begins at 13 or 14. And if a person were only mature enough, then the most normal thing is for him to get married at 13 and 14. So today we're not mature enough. But if you go back in history, just go back two centuries, and people did get married at 13 and 14 and 15. because they were mature enough. If people died at 30, so then they matured very quickly. And if people were working out in the fields at 10 or 11, so that matured a person. Today, where you have to know so many things in order to get a job, and our whole education system, and a child is reliant on his parents until he's about 55, so then you have a situation where people mature later. But that doesn't change the biology of things. From age 13, so is biologically we're wired that we do want someone of the opposite gender, and the correct way to go about that is to find a wife. So then a person comes to yeshiva and he's already tasted from the forbidden fruit, and now suddenly he's in a totally male environment, and that's not easy. So then a person will sometimes enter the dating scene very desperate. And these are all weaknesses. So we should at least know what our weaknesses are. So how do we overcome them? Well, let's go in order. So he said, first of all, you're a foreigner. So take it easy. Don't be so trusting. You don't have family to look into the girls, so you should try to get adopted family. You should get a rabbi who's close to you. You should research yourself. But you should try to find out and get yourself contacts. When I made Aliyah, so even though I had family here, they weren't really into this. So I had a roommate who I was very, very friendly with. And he had sisters in all the schools, and all the ages that I was dating, not the schools, but whenever I'd be offered a girl, I'd ask him if his sisters could look up the girl for me, and within an hour I had all the information, who her best friends were, and everything, because his sister knew someone who knew someone in that school, and within a short amount of time I had the information I needed. I could nix 2 out of 3 girls by getting enough information before the date that I didn't have to go out with 2 out of 3 girls. I still went out with over 50 girls. But at least I was able to save a lot of time and emotions by checking things out beforehand. So you might not have a friend like that, but you should at least get paired up with someone who does know at least how to check things out. And you can ask the rabbis here to help you out with that, everyone but me. I should be your last call, if at all. I'm just too busy. I can't. I'd love to say, give me a call, I'll be happy to help, but I won't. there's only so many hours in the day, and I don't see myself being able to do it. You think you're dating someone seriously, and you think that that's going to go to fruition, or you have questions, and you want me in the picture, then we could talk. I'd rather save the time for then. But in general, there are other rabbis, and there are other people, and you should turn to them. The fact that you're chozer b'tshuva, so that's what you're in this class for. And you should also trust your gut at least enough to ask questions. If it doesn't seem right to you and doesn't seem normal to you, so don't just relegate it to religion. Find out. Usually the questions that guys ask are very much on the mark. Usually if she's not embarrassed telling you about her mother cheating on her father, you're right, she should be embarrassed. That should not come up on the first date. If she's not embarrassed to tell you that her father's an alcoholic and that her brother's sitting in jail, okay, that's a reflection of honesty, but it's also a reflection of, I wonder what's going on here. If she doesn't care to tell you...
Those are warning signs?
The fact that it bothers you is legitimate. Don't just say, well, she's a very firm girl and she's very modest and she's everything that I wanted in a girl. So if she's doing this, it must be right. No, listen to your gut at least enough to ask the question. Is it right that on the first date she goes out and buys a pack of cigarettes for both of us? It's a good question, it's a legitimate question, you know. A guy came and asked me that. He's right. You know, they're standing and he offers it, does she want ice cream? And she says, I'd rather a Marlboro. You know, okay. You know, you want to marry a woman who smokes. That's, you got to think about the repercussions to the kids. Yeah, okay, fine. I'm not telling you, you know, that's an issue of preference. But you're right if that turns on a red light and you ask yourself, is that really right? Don't just say, I'm a chozer b'tshuva, I don't know what I'm doing. You're a chozer b'tshuva, but you're a human being, and if you have questions, so follow up on them. Now, the fact that you're desperate, so don't be. mind over matter. And secondly, try to find other venues to satiate the need for friendship, the need for camaraderie. There is a problem that bachelors will often form friendships that are too intense, that are really not right, and a person has to be wary of that. But at the same time, you need to have those people in your life who you could schmooze with. It could be an aunt, it could be a grandmother, but try to find another venue of having someone to share your life with, so that you don't show up to the date and you're like a puppy dog, just happy you have someone to talk to, someone of the opposite gender. So yes, we are maintaining the tzanua setting of the yeshiva, and I'm not telling you to go out there and get a girlfriend until you find your wife. I most definitely am not saying that. And don't go into chat rooms, and don't go onto Facebook, and don't go trying to find yourself someone to speak to through these venues. But do find someone in a healthy way, where you don't end up coming to the dates very desperate to have someone to talk to.
Are you saying that it needs to be someone of the opposite gender?
No.
Because you mentioned a grandmother, an aunt.
I mentioned a friend, and I mentioned the dangers of that. I also mentioned a grandmother and aunt. So now it's up to a person to find which one works for him. I understand if someone tells me I need someone else. My roommates just don't cut it, neither does my chavrusa. So that's why I suggested an aunt or grandmother. You'll notice I was careful not to say your friend's wife, because that's not right. Now, some guys think if they treat me so nicely and I'm a Ben Bite in the house, so that's okay. You know, if she's old enough to be your grandmother, then I hear it. If she's only 3 years your senior, then I think that's wrong. It's one thing to consult with someone on a one-time basis, but for that to be your venue of having camaraderie, that's wrong. So that's why I gave the examples of an aunt or a grandmother to try and keep things in perspective. Yes?
I noticed a lot with other people also that even though they have friends, even though they have grandmothers, there is still a certain gap that Hashem, I think Hashem, by the way, put in our hearts that could be filled only with the eventual union with a partner, a marriage partner, right? And I think that to say that, oh, if you just exercise enough, if you do 30 curls, or if you go and play soccer, automatically that gap is going to be gone. In my experience, and in the experience of some of my friends, it hasn't exactly applied in our cases.
Right. Granted, what we're saying is don't walk into the date desperate. We're not saying you're finding a replacement for your wife. Shadchanim. It's not a dirty word. It's just synonymous with a liar. I'm a shadchan. I'm a shadchan, and I always say, don't trust any shadchanim except for me, and you can't know I'm telling the truth, so don't trust me either. I could tell you horror stories. I could tell you about the guy who was told that she's an innocent, wonderful, beautiful, excellent girl, only to show up to the date to find out she's been married 3 times in the last 2 years. And the shadchan didn't bother telling him that she has a baby at home. True story from here. I could tell you the story about the guy who the shadchan told him she's approximately your age. He was 26 and she was 42. True story from here. I could tell you a lot of stories about shadchanim. There's a famous joke about shadchanim. A shadchan, a woman, calls up a guy and she says, I have the most fantastic girl for you. She is, you know, in the Garden of Eden, if you were Adam, she was Eve. And in Shemayim, when your neshama was created, her neshama was created. She is the perfect match for you. And not only that, I'm telling you, she has all the traits you wanted. And she's exactly the right height, and she comes from the family you wanted. And she's gentle, and she's sweet, and she's got an excellent sense of humor. And she's going on and on and on. And he goes, so what's her name? So she says, I'm not sure, which girl was I telling you about? This is a joke, they say, because the Shadchanim will tell you what they think you want to hear, and then they'll find the name to match it. There are a few very, very good Shadchanim out there. And even those that are classical can sometimes get it right. So I just say, buyer beware. Meaning, there's nothing wrong with using a Shadchan. Quite the contrary, there's something very right. Meaning, Shadchanim have a lot of boys and a lot of girls. The reason I don't deal in Shaduchim anymore is because I don't have the time. If I finish here at 11 o'clock at night and I get home close to 12 o'clock at night, so then no one can really call me. So I stop dealing in Shaduchim for the simple reason that I can't interview new girls. I used to have a roster of a few hundred girls. So then, when a guy came to me, I had 100, 150 guys. So then, you can match. But if I don't have it, so I no longer do it too much. You know, where we'd once set up five people a night, now we're setting up one a month. Because I just don't have who to set up anymore. I'm out of names. So I do think a person should use Shadchanim. I'm just saying, beware. Beware and don't trust them.
What's your reasonable price for Shadchanim?
I don't know. I think if you mentioned it, that the right thing is that if someone was your Shadchan, you should give them a monetary gift. It's not right that people end up, the person sets up the shidduch and everything's right, and then they buy him a nice sefer or a nice bottle of wine. It's not right. I can tell you as a Shadchan, my expenses were thousands of shekel a month just on the phone bills. Where are you going to cover that from? So it's not right. People should give at least 1,000 shekel to Shadchan, at least each side. I don't think less than that is right. I can tell you that there was a time when we were doing it where we were making an average of shidduch every 3 weeks to a month. Okay, do the math. If it's costing me 3,000 shekel a month and I'm we were zochet to be mishadech a shidduch a month, I didn't cover my cost. If each and not everyone gives. So even after you're assuming, let's say each side gave 1,000 shekel, you don't usually get a shidduch a month. I'm saying that was a lot of siyata d'shmaya, and the number of phone calls it involves to each side and to follow up and to accompany. It's not an exaggeration to say somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 shekel a month. You're not making a shidduch a month usually.
If someone's not what we call professional shidduchim but approaches you, like one of the teachers in the home.
I would still think you should give that amount. And the reason is twofold. One, because I think that's what's right. And secondly, because if people will start giving the way they should, the more people will be ready. And there's a big problem that not enough people set people up. And in other circles where if a person makes a shidduch, you give him $4,000 or $5,000, so suddenly you find more people setting up shidduchim. You know, money talks. Yeah. So it's at least that, you know.
Yeah, I heard the price anonymously about $2,500 in Harnof.
I never got that. And I set up people in Harnof too. no one volunteered that. That's not a...
When you say buy everywhere, does that mean that you go out with a girl, but you see something that doesn't seem right, you don't brush it off?
When I say buyer beware, I mean two things. Number one, that when the Shadchan tells you something, all it means is that it's a possibility. I didn't say probability, I said possibility. The Shadchan tells you she's nice, it's possible. The Shadchan tells you she's smart, it's possible. Don't tell them that, but I'm just saying, when the Shadchan tells you something, to my mind it's a possibility, and that's about it. Look into the girl. And that's the second point, that if the Shadchan sets you up, so look into the girl, and in a minute we'll discuss how you research a person. I know I'm not getting a fan club here of Shadchanim, but anyone that knows what's going on, I gave you a few stories.
If it's a friend of a friend, you don't know any other friends of them.
We'll get there. Yes?
How about this here? Is that let's say that I'm a wealthy guy. All right, I tell Shadchan, I'll pay him, her, say 20, $15,000 to make the match, okay? All right, and he's going to make it his full-time job. And he's going to contact other matchmakers, all right? And I'm sure that then he could save the he could save out the matchmaker, save out the guy. He's a wealthy guy, and the girls won't be turning him down because they know that this guy has money and he can take care of her.
But if the girls aren't,
he didn't finish.
I'm not finished here. Is that part of the reason why there's such a problem is that guys don't have a stable source of income.
I hear.
You know,
okay.
And that's a big thing for girls. It's the same as the weight is weight does to guys. You know.
I hear.
Well, actually, my question kind of ties into his. A lot of the guys here at the Mahon are going out on Shidduchim. And I've heard over conversations that went a little bit like this. Like, okay, so what makes you think you have the right to go out on Shidduchim? I don't know. I just figured, like, right now we'll probably be this kind of a partner. Okay, how are you going to support a wife right now? He's like, well, I'm going in the army. By the time we're married, that's where I'll be. He's like, but you're not right now. If you meet the right girl right now, you're getting married within months. And then I wanted to step in and say, whoa, wait a minute here. You're going to be set up with a woman, right? And I think really, especially when you're doing it through a shotgun, the shotgun really doesn't know you personally. So even if it's a great shotgun, they're going to set you up with a girl that may not be perfect for you. So you need... I think it's important to date a girl for a long time, especially when you're doing it through a shotgun, so you get to know her more personally. I think there's a bit too much pressure on some of the guys sometimes in the Haredi world to get married right away when they're dating. Is that good pressure or is that a bad pressure?
I think we dealt with it last time. Were you here?
Mm-hmm. I think.
Okay. So we discussed it. I don't want to go catch up. It's there. We went into it a little bit. But I do want to take a step back to deal with a question, with an issue you raised. The question of Parnassa. So that's a real question. Meaning when guys come and tell me they want to start dating... I will ask that question. How do you plan on supporting your family? What's the plan? You have to think about that. I mean,
your name is Jeffrey Zuckerberg.
Okay. So,
he's a paying Jew, married a ship, so.
At any rate, I think that that responsibly you're getting married. What you sign in the ksuba is ezona chalkela farnes. You say, I'm going to feed you, I'm going to take care of you, I'm going to put bread on the table, even if it means taking the shirt off my back. It says those words in the ksuba. So how are you signing that? So a person could tell me, I could be a taxi driver. Fine, is that what you're going to tell her on the date? You know, a person has to ask himself. If a person has a situation where either he says, the army is going to pay my bills, nefesh b'nefesh, aliyah, the first few years we'll live in a caravan. There are all kinds of ideas that people have. I think they should know the details of those ideas. How are you going to make ends meet? I'll get an education. Well, how are you going to cover the bills while you get the education? Shul work. And what will be when there'll be kids? And what will be, you have to figure it out. Sometimes I'll tell a person, you know, even if it means compromising on your material life, you're at a stage where you have to start dating. You're going to go cuckoo if you don't start dating. It means that you won't get the education you wanted and you might end up being a taxi driver your whole life. I'd rather that than have you go cuckoo. You know, sometimes people are going to flip because if they don't move forward on dating. But if a person can, then a person should try to approach it responsibly in a way that he really will be able to cover costs. If you have parents who are going to be able to help you out, if you have other situations where you think it's going to be doable, or you're dating with the understanding and she's going to have the understanding that the first few years she's going to chip in more to cover costs while you get settled financially, fine. But it's something you have to give real thought to. Bezrat Hashem, a couple gets married, within a year or two they marry to have a child, the child needs diapers, either the mother has to be there taking care of him or you have to pay for someone to take care of him. That's a 1,000 shekel just there. The mother's not taking care of him. Yeah? The mother's not taking care of him, so you have to... No, I didn't say 1,000 for diapers. I meant for a mitapelet, for someone to take care of him. And if you live in other neighbors, it could be 2,000 or 3,000 shekel. Depends on where you live. It depends on how many hours. If the mother's not nursing him, you got to cover Materna. You got to cover the formula. So that's another 80-100 shekel a week. So you're talking about expenses. You're talking about a few thousand shekel a month. Those are expenses. You could say, I could live on bread and cottage cheese for the first few years. Cottage cheese today is expensive. And we could live in a caravan, but what's the baby going to have? And then you need better heat in the house. You have to be realistic, meaning a person doesn't want to find himself with a job that he's a guard at a makolet for the rest of his life because he couldn't get his act together, and had he waited another year, he would have been able to do things differently. So that's where the issue of parnasa, I'm happy you raised it, Uri, that's a very important point. Yeah?
So how do you make the transition for many of the guys in the makolet, for Chuzer Rishuva, and they may have some kind of 1 or 2 years of college, but they don't have a job lined up. You can't, do you not date until you said, okay, I'm going to start looking for a job now, and once I have a job, then I'll start dating. But you could be not married for a year or 2 years. In the meantime, how do you stop learning and go to work? You can't do both, and if you're a positive chuba, you need to keep learning for a while.
Sometimes you could do both. Sometimes a person could take nighttime classes. Sometimes a person can get a degree online. We've had guys who got psychology degrees online during nights and Ben Azmanim. We've had guys who did all kinds of things. I think that it's something which requires thought. That's why I set up my gemach to help people get a trade. And a trade does not have to be getting a college degree. A guy could learn to be an electrician. A guy could learn to be a plumber. There are other things. And it depends on the person. I don't know what Landers offers.
It's like
saying there are trades.
Of course, like once a week at night for 5 months.
Okay, the question is, what do you have it then?
Sort of
real estate is a field which a person could also potentially go into. I'm saying there are options. A person has to think about it and find a direction. Internet dating. I used to be very against internet dating. I still loathe internet dating, but I see the need for it because sometimes guys can't find the shidduch any other way. So first, a few horror stories about internet dating. We had a guy here at the Machon. He met a girl through an internet site. I don't even remember who he is anymore. I don't remember. I remember the story. I remember walking him through the whole story, being with him through the whole story. I remember who it is. Okay. it's been a few years. So here's the story. He makes a connection with a girl in England, I think. Somewhere in Europe. I'm pretty sure it was England. And they're communicating and they're chatting and they're in contact via Skype and chat rooms, and every night they're talking, and it's going really, really well. And so... they start discussing that really they should meet face to face because this has a lot of potential, and he's thinking that could be that they're going to get married, and he's very, very excited. So he takes his life savings and he buys a ticket to England, and she told him that she has a friend and she'll be able to put him up, and he takes his her cell number, and they agreed. Look, they've been communicating via the internet for months now. He flies. He lands at the airport. She's not there. He looks around. Not there. He waits an hour. He calls her cell phone. No answer. 2 hours. He starts calling. He starts wondering. To make a long story short, she never showed up. He never met her. He thinks she was married and that she never told him. And he thinks that it could be, you know, that she thought of getting divorced and she thought that she might marry him, but he doesn't know because she never answered him. You know, one time she answered and said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I'm busy now." And a week later, I assume she's married. That's what we both assumed. He came back devastated. He was stuck a week in England. He had to shell out money for a hotel room because his ticket back was at the end of the week. She had told him she'd put him up. Now he had no place to stay. You could imagine how many tears that guy shed. Now, if this story only happened once here at the Machon, you'd say, okay, I know of three times. That's what I know. I don't know how many guys it happened to that didn't share the story with me. But I know of three. So, internet dating is a pretty risky thing. We've had many guys get very burnt with girls that they met over the internet, where there was critical information that wasn't given. You could, if you talk to anyone, basically, every guy I know that's been dating through the internet has been burnt very badly. So you'll tell me, what's that different than a shadchan? They'll lie to you too. I think it's different. I don't think you'll end up with a shadchan setting up with someone who's still married that's not going to show up at the airport. You know, I don't think that's going to happen. I could, you know, but I don't think so. So to a certain degree, the anonymity that internet affords is a very, very dangerous tool. We had a worse story, but I don't think I should tell you that one.
I love internet dating.
Okay, good. I agree that there are scenarios where a person doesn't have another choice. I've told guys, if all the shadchanim you're going to aren't setting you up, so what choice do you have? So, you know, there are those signs on the roads, proceed with caution. Okay, proceed with caution. I'm not saying not to. I'm just saying you have to realize how dangerous it is. At least you should date someone on the same continent, preferably in the same country. And that leads us to the next point, which we'll get to in a second. Yes?
I am interested in hearing the story you're talking about.
The worst story.
B.
Okay, the worst story was that in the end there wasn't a woman. Okay.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
He was dating her for a while, and when he showed up to the date, it wasn't her.
It was a he.
It was a he, okay? The guy didn't know what to do with himself. The guy came to me and asked me, is there something wrong with my head? How come I didn't catch on? All this dating, he started questioning himself. So you're laughing. Could you imagine how devastated the guy is? I mean, you know.
Huh? She
and
some guy comes over and
introduces
himself.
Scary. He probably had some feelings for him. I'm sorry, it was perfect timing.
I think I got my life savings to get here.
The question I wanted to ask was today's society is constructed in such a way where, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to make a decent living, especially here in Israel, especially here in Yerushalayim, till later on in life. And most people can get by on that because they can go out after work and go to clubs and get girls and do whatever they want. They can go out and just fool around. But for religious guys, it's really hard because society is constructed where they say, you shouldn't get married till you're older, right? And we don't do that because we can fool around so we could care less. And so, you know, for that reason, the point at which people were married and earned a decent living went up. And for religious people who said, we don't fool around till we're married, we still have to abide by that standards, but we still have to take the worst of both worlds so to speak and say, oh, we're also not going to get married till we get older because the standard age has gone up. You know?
No, that's not why. It's a practical question, as soon as you're ready. If you're ready emotionally, if you're ready religiously, if you're ready ideologically, and you're ready practically, you have a parnasa. Once you're ready, if you're ready at 15, go, no one's going to stop you. I think that a person should find an affordable community that's a good community outside Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is very expensive, so okay, who said you should stick around here, but go to a good religious community. But it doesn't have to be here. We said proceed with care, proceed with caution. So the caution is really to verify who am I, who is it that I'm being set up with. 2 points. Verify, which we'll talk about in a minute. And point number two, once we've touched on it, that's very, very important, is you shouldn't do any serious dating through phone, chat, internet. I can't say this enough, and I can tell you that people don't listen to me and get burnt very badly, like the stories I told you, but we'll revisit this point later on. This is a very important point. Date the real person. We'll discuss this later, but the example that I like to give is that you're talking on the phone to the girl, and you're telling her about something that happened today, and she goes, "Really? Wow! That's amazing! And how'd you do this, and how'd you do that?" And it sounds like a great conversation. Now let's zoom in and see her side of the picture.
Really? Wow! Wow, that's amazing. You think it's a joke? Oh no.
This is what happens. And if you're not dating the girl face to face, you're not seeing all those things, just like our listeners here didn't see everything I just did.
70% of your conversation is by seeing and not by hearing.
Yeah. Tremendous part of what we understand is body language. And once we touch this point, I'll share with you a story and then we'll get back to verification. Yes?
I just have one little comment. Is that I never did phone dating. Hoes and Chewer days, right? I always use the internet sites to get a chat or get an email, alright? And then from that I go to the phone and then maybe spend 5 minutes talking to her, then set up a date. I never ever did phone dating or internet dating. I always used it as a means to meet the girl, but then I had a face to face meeting with her.
Excellent. Rabbi Dr. Twersky, the famous psychiatrist, I think, in the United States. Now he's in Muncie. He was in Pittsburgh, yeah. Tells the following story. When he was interning in the hospital of psychiatry, so then one day he comes in as an intern, now he's a doctor, he could sign medication, and there's a patient that's complaining. So they go over to the patient, and the nurse basically tells him, this is a patient that's complaining for attention. This hurts them, and that hurts them, and the patient is complaining. So he comes to the bedside, he checks the patient, gives him the proper attention. And in the end, he tells the nurse, "Nurse, I want you to give this patient sodium chloride. What's the solution of salt in
sodium chloride?"
Sodium chloride. So he tells her, "I want you to give I want you to give a serious dosage to this patient of sodium chloride mixed with a large amount of H2O, whatever, okay." He tells her a code that basically she should give him a placebo, she should give him nothing, you know, okay. So the patient will think they got a serious shot and suddenly their pains will dissipate. Fine, the nurse takes him aside and says, "Doctor, I'm sorry, we can't do that." So he says, "What do you mean you can't do that? I told you what to give him." So the nurse says, "I know you just told me what to give him, but I can't do that." So he says, "But what do you mean? I prescribed. Why can't you give?" So she says, "We have orders in this hospital that we can't give placebos." So he said, "Yeah, but I was working here last year when I was still a student. We did it all the time." She said, "Yeah, as a student, you can do what you want. Not your doctor in this hospital, you're not allowed to give placebos." So he asked her, "Well, why? What do you mean? What's this rule?" So she said, "Not my rule. It's the head of the hospital. Go talk to him. I can't give a placebo." So he says, "Fine." He goes up to the head of the hospital, sets up an appointment, and asks him, "I was told you said not to give placebos. Why?" So he said to him, "Look, when you come into a patient and you talk to the patient, there's one tool that you have which is critical to your care in psychiatry. And that is the trust that the patient has in you as a psychiatrist. When you're going to give a placebo, everything you say is to convince the patient that you're treating him. But what you don't have control over is your body language, which tells the patient, I'm lying to you. And you don't catch it, nor does he consciously catch it. But subconsciously, what the patient registers is, the doctor's lying to me, I can't trust him. And as much as you're going to try to convince him that you're really treating him, your body language, whether you like it or not, is going to convey the exact opposite. And even though consciously he won't say anything, subconsciously what registers is, the doctor's a liar. So that's why our policy here is that we never give placebos, because one of the greatest tools you have to treat a patient is that consciously and subconsciously they trust you. Rabbi Dr. Twersky said that he can attest that since that day, he never lied. Never lied. He does his best, you know, we're all human, but not white lies, not nothing. Since that day, since he learned that lesson, on principle, he does his best never, ever, ever to lie. So he might have fallen here and there, but in general, he can say that he almost never lied in his life. Now, we're all that way. You're sitting on a date. What you perceive from the girl is at least as important as what she says. So you have to have face-to-face dating. And people ask me, how does Skype work when you have the picture, when you could see the video? I'm not smart enough to answer that. I doubt it's the same, but it's obviously better than phone. I wouldn't go with it. You know, this is the most important thing in your life. Your whole life is going to be built on who your partner is. You built your life with this person, so I don't know. I'm not smart enough to answer that. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't recommend it. I don't have enough experience. Phone, chat, email, SMS, I have plenty of experience, I could tell you. Doesn't work. You feel like it works, you think that it works, doesn't work. And then you end up misleading yourself. You don't really understand the party you're standing opposite. I've seen many couples get married off of primarily phone dating, meaning they lived in different parts of the world, so they dated here and there face to face, but most of their dating was by phone, by internet, by chat. And they both said that that was a huge mistake. I mean, they both realized that they didn't know the other person because of that. You never know the person you're dating completely. But they both realized that there were critical things that they just didn't catch because they weren't sitting face to face long enough. So that, once we've touched on internet dating, so we've also touched on that. And Be'ezrat Hashem, next week, we will pick up with the question of, how do you look into the prospective shidduch? How do you look into a girl? What do you do? I ask that you show up the next week with a pen and paper, because the formula I'm going to give you is important and it seems simple, but most people don't do it. And I know it's easy, you could catch these classes online, but realistically, get yourself a notebook, which you'll be using for shiduchim, and in the front of the notebook, write down the formula. You'll adopt whatever you want of the formula, but at least that way, you'll have the notebook, and you'll have the formula at the beginning of the notebook. When I started off as a mohel, so I took the little book, and in the opening page of the book, I wrote down the questions you should ask each parent. So make sure I didn't forget a question. You know, doctors do the same thing with their clipboards. They have a list of questions they should ask each patient. Did you take the temperature? Did you this, that, the other thing? I recommend you do that. Get yourself a notebook that's better bound than these flimsy ones, something that'll last you. And next week we'll discuss why you should have a notebook, but at least for next week you'll have a notebook. Come with a notebook and a pen, and then you'll be able to
clean notebook
write down.
Special for
dating. Yeah, clean notebook special for dating. Yeah. Okay. We're going.